enjoy a good squeeze.
I say we get a new chair for up here.
New chair, new mics.
Is this okay like this? Because it's easier for me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. You sound much better.
I sound so good. I'm a natural.
Where's my drink?
Here, one more down. All right, let's give a little cheers.
You know, the cheers?
A toast. Dink.
What are you drinking there?
To the return. I am drinking Iron City beer. Premium lager. It's family owned.
Iron City. You're tough like Daniel Craig was in this film.
That's right.
I'm drinking a Vesper.
That's right.
In honor of Vesper.
Should we do our... cheers to that. Should we do our intro?
I think it's time.
Yeah. This is all pre-stuff. This is not... Like, we're not going to just change our format to like, we have conversation before the thing starts.
Even though we do.
We do. We just don't tell people about it. This is fun.
But you know what we do tell people?
What?
Hello.
Hi.
And welcome to A Good Squeeze. I'm August.
And I'm Margo.
And this is the show where the novice and the nostalgic dive headfirst into the world of James Bond.
That's right.
The world of 007.
I myself being the novice, he himself being the nostalgic, as he's been saying.
Yes, indeed. And this one, go figure, is a nostalgic one for me, even though... It came out in 2008, which was, in the grand scheme of life and history, not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the world of James Bond, that was only just a couple movies ago.
That's true. But in the grand scheme of our own lives, our own perspective, as is done on A Good Squeeze, quite some time ago. I think I was 11.
Mm.
What's 8 plus 5? That's not 11. You're the numbers guy.
Yeah, that.
Shit, how old was I?
You were 13.
Okay.
And I was, well, you were either, you were probably 13 when this movie came out. Mm-hmm. I was 17 when this movie came out, about to be 18.
You're a fall baby.
Yeah. And
I'm a spring chicken.
I think this movie came out in the fall. It came out right around my birthday. It might have even came out in November, to be honest, of that year.
Oscar season.
Yeah. This one didn't get any of them.
Wonder why.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple Bond movies have won
Did
some Oscars.
Did we even say which movie we're talking about right now?
Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, there you go.
If you don't have your Bond hat on, you know, 2008 Bond movie, it must have been Quantum of Solace. Hey, Quantum
must
of
Solace. Must have, yeah. I was doing the math in my head. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Quantic of Solace.
Five plus... This, 2008.
Eight and five make 11.
Holy cannoli, you're my sister. Yeah, so Quantum of Solace. I was a peak teenager at this time and loved James Bond. Had seen Casino Royale. That was my first Bond film in the theater in 2006. So 2008, I was a little older. You know, really fallen into my own of what I liked and interests and stuff like that. So when this movie came out, I could not wait to see Quantum of Solace, even though at the time I thought that was the worst James Bond movie title ever, and maybe still could be.
Do you know what the meaning is, Quantum of Solace? Because I don't know what a quantum is. I know what solace
is. A quantum is like
It's 11.
Like a small quantity. Quantum.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a small quantity. It's more like a physics term. And then solace is like a comfort. So it's a really cool, sexy way to say a small bit of comfort is a quantum of solace.
Hey, I have a story about quantum. This is completely unrelated, but just a little glimpse into my life. When I was in high school, my first year, I came from a private school going into a public school, and I didn't know anybody, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I made these really smart friends, which is shocking to myself and others. And,
considering how well you can do math.
Yeah. And I was the character hire, or what is the personality hire.
Yeah.
And we were eating lunch together, and they were talking about quantum physics, just quantum physics in general. They were just discussing it like it was casual conversation. And I felt really dumb.
Uh-huh.
And I like listened and I nodded when my friends nodded and I laughed when they did. And I went home that day, and just another testament to my intelligence, I just opened the dictionary and looked at quantum physics. There was like maybe four sentences about it. Yeah. Not even. There were like two sentences about it. And I was like, this doesn't help at all. Like, one, I don't know how to do research. Two, I can't read. So I don't even know why I did that. But yeah, so quantum. Yeah. Now I know. I'm going to hit him up. I guess you'll never believe this.
Now you know. I can contribute to this conversation.
Let's pick up where we left off, guys. So quantum means amount.
It's like a small amount of some comfort, a quantum of solace.
That's right.
Is what that title means. And it was pulled from Fleming. There was a short story he wrote called Quantum of Solace. Has nothing to do with the plot of this movie. In fact, his story was more of like, it was a Bond mission, but not what we think. It's not like he's got to stop like an evil villain from destroying the Earth. It was more like he's observing his target from a restaurant kind of thing. And he reflects on how boring this mission seems to be, and in comparison to like his other adventures. And, you know, he has to like, I might be misquoting because I never did read this story. I just kind of know of it. He has to like take that moment to like appreciate the smaller things. He's not getting his life threatened. He's not, you know, trying to stop nuclear war. He's literally gathering information, and you know, it's like his quantum of solace, nice, kind of thing. It, once again, a really cool, sexy way. I find the word quantum, definitely from this movie, to be like a sexy word. Quantum.
Okay.
I don't know why. Do you ever find words sexy?
Yeah, sure. It's quantum. Quantum. I don't know. It reminds me of Quentin. Mr. Tarantino.
Which is not sexy.
No. Well, he can be. No, he's not. Quentin. I can't even say it.
Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino. Quentin of Solace. Quantum of Solace has a lovely melody to it. Quantum of Solace. There's all these words that kind of like, or all these sounds. I'm about to talk about the alphabet because I'm real smart. But like the Q and the S being so close to each other in the alphabet, I think there is some psychological term where when you use I don't know the specific term and I don't know the specific phenomenon, but when you use sounds that are close to each other in the alphabet, with letters that are close to each other in the alphabet, it does have more of a melody to it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think that might be some Q and S, or very Q, R, S, T, U, V, you know.
So you're saying,
I know
like,
the alphabet.
Quantum of Solace sounds like a musical kind of,
it's,
like,
yeah, it's speaking. Easier to digest. It's got some beauty to it, and I do really appreciate the title. I think this is the first time we've ever talked about the title and lingered on it for so long.
It's because the title is weird. It is an odd title. It's not, you know, Octopussy. It's not, you know, Dying of the Day or...
Right.
Even something more simple, like GoldenEye. Like, what is a GoldenEye?
But it is also a testament to how the newer Bond films were taking a lot of risks in terms of how they were marketing themselves, how they were presenting themselves. Because there are a lot of Fleming novels that they just changed the name because they were like, this isn't marketable. You could give us some examples because I can't remember. But
they don't change the names necessarily, but they definitely change the plots.
Sure. Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, they were taking some risks when they made this movie, a few risks. And one, I won't say this is a risk. It was definitely a choice. This, at the time, was the first, like, recognized direct sequel of a Bond movie. So
oh, that's right.
This one takes place, literally, we're presented, like, minutes after the previous film.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, Casino Royale spoiler alert. It ends with Bond confronting a character named Mr. White and shooting him in the legs and essentially, like, not, I won't say abducting him, but it was his mission to capture this man. So capturing him, that's the word.
Yeah.
And given the classic, the name's Bond, James Bond, end movie, this one picks up right where that one left off with him transporting said capture.
Mm.
And the story progresses, and it's definitely... It's its own adventure, certainly. It does tie to Casino Royale. It is picking up mostly where Bond left off emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And that is
a testament to a good sequel. You want to pick up where you left off. Don't give us a time jump. Don't give us a prequel. That's what you got to do. And not to say that the Bond films don't do this well. Obviously, they're all movies, like standalone movies. But when it comes to this modern era of movie making, you need to kind of, if you're going to do a new film, it's got to be a sequel, a prequel, or...
Well, that's what makes money. Like,
exactly. And at the end of the day, but that's, I think, something they did really well with this movie, to a certain extent, is maintain, like, it is marketable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sequel, but it is its own film.
Yeah, you know, you and I kind of recently had a slight debate on the Bond franchise as far as a series goes, where you were kind of identifying them as these are individual movies, which they are, and stories, which they are.
Yeah, we were playing a board game, too, so we got real competitive.
It got real heated and competitive. Yeah. But technically, they all are sequels. They don't necessarily... you know, like, story elements connect. They're definitely their own missions, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But there are characters that overarch. There are definitely callbacks and things like that throughout. Sure. This one, though, is story-wise the traditional, like, sequel, as, like, a continuation
That's
of
right.
a story. So, and to be honest, if I recall, that rubbed some people the wrong way. It was different. People don't like change.
The new franchise, or at least the new Bond, those ones, mm-hmm. pissed a lot of people off, I feel like, every single movie. There's always something.
Well, not Skyfall. People love Skyfall.
I'm sure there were some. We'll talk. We'll discuss it. Have we discussed it? No, we haven't.
We haven't gone to Skyfall yet. And I'm definitely of a different feel for Skyfall. It might be my inner hipster. A lot of people love Skyfall, and that's one of their favorites. I do really like it, and it's definitely one when I watch it, I'm like, damn, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I do,
banger of a song, too.
Yeah, I do think it's great, but part of me is just like, yeah, I don't like it as much as the other ones. Like, to that point, people in the Bond community, mostly, and in general, just common people, don't really care for this movie Quantum of Solace too much, and I don't know why. I love Unwanted Things, and that makes me like this movie actually a bit more. Mm-hmm. I've actually this is real interesting to hear. I've as a nostalgic, I've had quite the journey with this movie, as far as I say that every movie that we talk about.
You grew up with them. Like,
I did. Yeah. But I've gone up and down with Quantum of Solace. Up and down and up, I'll say. Spoiler alert. I do really like this movie. But when I first saw it, like I said, as a teenager, you know, I was super anticipating this movie. Went to the theater and saw it. I thought it was incredible. I was obsessed with it. I bought the soundtrack. At the time, I didn't have internet where I lived. And if you wanted to listen to music, you had to buy a CD. So I went to Walmart and I bought that CD of Quantum of Solace. So it was like... David Arnold's score, and then the theme song by Jack White and Alicia Keys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, listened on repeat. At the time, I was working at a restaurant. I had a little pocket money. I bought a PlayStation 3.
Ooh la la.
And that PlayStation 3 came with a Blu-ray. And that Blu-ray was Quantum of Solace, my first Blu-ray. You know,
I gasped, but I didn't know that. Yeah. I completely forgot. No way!
It's for the audience. I'm just throwing out all my nostalgic stuff because we're on it right now.
Mm-hmm.
With that pocket money, I bought a surround sound system, the cheapest one I could afford. But I tested the surround sound with Quantum of Solace. This opening scene is a car chase, and it is breakneck, car crash, like... that opening action scene.
That's the one you use... Sorry, go ahead.
And well, what you're going to say... Go ahead.
By all means, because I'm going to fuck it up. So.
So I tested it with that surround sound system. To this day, you know, that was 2009, really.
And just to paint a picture for the audience... that surround sound system is, you know, when you're watching like a 90s movie and like the main character kid who's like middle class family goes to the rich kid's house and they have like the flat screen TV with the sound system, the sound, like whatever you're imagining for that sound system, that's what it looked like. Massive
not
pillars.
Not this one. This is 2009.
Oh, I'm
me.
Guys.
Yeah, see, this is why you just need to...
Don't listen to me. I'm just a novice.
you went on to say You go ahead and tell the story. Actually,
well,
let me.
Everyone knows that's our, like, je ne sais quoi of the podcast. Margot interrupts and talks too much and then derails the conversation. August gets us back on track.
And getting us back on track, but almost the same point. Because what you said will come back into play. This is my first surround sound system. You know, I attempt to be a cinephile. I attempt to. I, you know, with what I can afford. And at 18 years old at the time, I could afford an RCA surround sound system from Walmart. I tested it with Quantum of Solace. To this day, whenever I upgrade, whether it's a sound bar or a new surround sound system, I always test it with Quantum of Solace, that opening sequence. And what Marco's referring to, this is probably, 2018. So a full decade after I got my first surround sound system, I had a bit more pocket money and I spent like $1,000 on some crazy surround sound system. That is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Those big tower speakers, like massive subwoofer.
That you got a great deal on.
I did. This sucker was so loud and so booming when I'm playing that Quantum of Solace. The place we were living in at the time, where I was, it rattled the light bulb out of the ceiling.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's mostly the light bulb wasn't screwed in enough. Yeah. But
shout out Matt.
I like to say the sound system rattled that light bulb out of the ceiling and it fell on the floor.
Hell yeah.
It was crazy.
It's a movie moment.
It was.
You squeezed a little 007 there.
Yes.
Swish.
So like that is like, it was a year ago, Christmas time last year, I wanted to buy a new sound bar because that big sound system is a little unsightly for today's standards. It's massive, and in our situation, our living room, it takes up way too much
space. This is him dancing around the issue of me being like, it's a little ugly. I don't really like it. Can you find a different place for it? And we still have it, but we did upgrade.
I don't want to say as a proper husband, but as a person, I agree.
Yeah.
It is, for our room, and I'm more, I'm an aesthetic guy. It does take it up. I'll use it.
Fancy cardigan. Of course you're an aesthetic guy.
Yeah. And I'm drinking a martini.
That's right.
I was like, it needs to go somewhere else. But for where we watch movies, I need some good sound. So I was testing sound bars. And like an animal, I bought two different sound bars. And I had them like almost stacked on top of each other. And I did like side-by-side audio tests. I'm like, I'm going to return one of these sons of bitches. But which one? So I played that Quantum of Solace opening action sequence probably like 20 times.
I was going to say, mind you, this didn't take like 5 minutes, maybe four, whatever. No, it was a day. I'm upstairs and I can hear that scene play over and over and over again. It's good. You're in your element.
But I found the right one. And, that to that point alone, this movie's very important to me because I will do that forever. I will always use Quantum of Solace. Mm-hmm. And it was the same Blu-ray I used. The audio quality is incredible. I always pop in that Blu-ray for that. There's a video game associated with this movie. I never played that, but I know some people kind of like it, even though the game's kind of shit from what I understand. But I never played it. But I'm just trying to like think of any other like, little nostalgic things like that. I think those are the peak ones off the top of my head. And if anything else comes up, I'll spit it out.
So
it's mostly audio.
I'm like, well, now my turn.
Now your turn. Cause your relationship with Quantum of Solace is relatively new. We watched Casino and then it was like, hey, we got to watch Quantum of Solace. People don't like this movie. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I remember when it came out. Like, I was fully conscious. I knew that the Bond, like, Daniel Craig. To me, Daniel Craig was Bond. Like, that's all I knew about 007 and everything. But I remember when that movie came out, and this was when I was just fed up with, like, so I guess I was 12 or 13. But it like, dawned on me. This is when, like, there was, like, that, like, breach through the membrane of just, like, oh, I want to watch a movie. Oh, any movie is great. Like, it's when I started realizing, like, how they make money in Hollywood. And I was like, this is just another cash grab. Like, and this is when, like, I was full-blown conspiracy theorist, like, all that stuff, as one is when they're 13.
At 12, 13.
Yeah, growing up in California, we're a little different out there. No, everyone's the same everywhere. But, so that's all I really knew about it. And I'm not big on sequels, and when, like, we were just starting to watch these Bond films, when you mentioned Quantum Solace, I didn't know what it was. You explained it to me, and I was like, oh, it's just another sequel. It's going to be bad. Like, at this point in my life, if you tell me, oh, this is a sequel to this movie, I'm just going to assume it's bad. I'll still watch it with a positive lens. I'd rather like a movie than dislike it. I'd rather like anything than dislike it. Life's more fun that way. But
do you feel like, to what you just said, if it's a sequel, it's probably bad? Do you mean like not as good as the original, or do you mean like not a good movie?
And not a good movie.
See, I'm not gonna be like, I think you're wrong with your own opinion, but I know, but because we were married, I know plenty of movies that you love that are sequels.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying I hate sequels in general. It's if I haven't seen the movie. You show me the movie, and then you're like, there's a sequel. I'm like, I'm good. I mean, I'll still watch it. You know what I mean? Like, especially if there's a third one, I'm like, okay,
come in with. Like, prove me
adult.
Wrong.
I'm an adult. I know how to make an executive decision. Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I go in not walking on eggshells, but a little, like, tentative. I'm like, all right, this might be crap. And if it's good, I am happy to eat my words. I go, nyam, 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 nyam. Like, that's a great feeling sometimes. But if it's bad, you know, I mean, that's most of the time. Now, again, I'm coming in with this lens. That's how I, like, perceived the movie the first time we watched it. This is before we watched it for this episode. And I gotta say, wasn't exactly super into it, I guess, the first time we watched it. For me, the plot was very synonymous to, like, I'll poison the water supply. Like, it just seemed a little like, all right, guys, like, let's just get a little bit more original than that. But, I mean, that is a classic plot. I gotta hand it to, you know, Hollywood for establishing that. But, and cartoons.
I want to interject. I only want to interject because we do want to stick with, like, your journey with this movie. But, like you just said, poison the water supply. I do feel it's a little more original than that.
Sure, because it's for grown-ups.
Well, yeah. Only because he's not poisoning the water. He has a monopoly on water. Like, that's
just poisoning the water supply. I know. It's the same. That's a technicality.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he wasn't like, I'll put diarrhea medicine or reverse medicine, whatever. Diarrhea poison. Sorry,
Diarrhea poison. Oh, no. Poison, the poor diarrhea.
Poison is reverse medicine, really. Or it's synonymous to medicine. Dun, dun, dun. What was I going to say? Yeah, like, obviously, I'm speaking in layman's terms, you know, but it's one of those things where, like, the plot was a little, I don't know, a little bland for my opinion. And thank you for nodding at me and letting me know I can keep talking.
I'm like, yes, from really? Here, proceed with how your journey through this movie.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Gotcha. I said my piece.
They were like, go on. I'm like, I know, I will. What was I going to say? Oh, I don't remember. The plot itself was a little, it's just a little simple, a little basic. And when it came to, like, for me, relationships are the most important part in any movie, how characters interact with each other, how they develop over time alongside each other or independently. And by relationship, that could be the main character's relationship with themselves, side character's relationships with themselves. Like, that's, to me, is part of what makes a great movie. It was lacking on that front, just in terms of the characters. So why don't you just kind of give an overview of them's boys in that movie?
When you say them's boys in that movie, do you mean the plot or the characters?
Characters.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you got your Bond. You got a Bond ally in Mathis returning from Casino Royale.
Oh, yeah.
You got the Bond girl, the main Bond girl with Camille. Got the sub Bond girl with Strawberry Fields,
which was, we'll get to that.
And then you got your main baddie, Dominic Green, with his very forgettable henchman. I bet you don't even know his henchman's name, or even if you remember his henchman.
Nope.
Yep, his name was Elvis. And he had like a weird toupee. Yeah, whatever.
I remember the toupee.
Yeah, that's that guy.
Because it fell off when he fell down the stairs.
Yes, yes.
That's the only thing. I can't remember his face.
There's that sub-villain. I can't remember his name. The general. He was like the Cuban gentleman.
Was he eating? Nope. Was he eating the most fucking basic thing that could? Now I'm thinking of
but of something else. He had to do with Camille's backstory, and she wanted to kill him and mm-hmm. things like that. So you know, there's and then M has a big part in this movie also.
Real quick, with let's talk about the villains for a second. So you got the general, what's his face? Out of curiosity, why don't you Google that boy real quick?
Yeah, I'm ashamed I don't remember his name.
So you said 2008. Mm. What movies were coming out at that point? Because one thing we know about those Bond films, they don't hop on the trends, but they do absorb whatever themes are being put out by Hollywood years.
They can. This one, I don't want to say was exempt from that. The director was Mark Forster, and he's definitely more of like, I'll say, an artistic director, and you can definitely see that in this style of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they weren't really going for anything comparative at the time. Like Dark Knight came out that year.
See, because
Slumdog Millionaire came out that year.
Okay, because I was thinking very much like, you know, like cartels and like, you know, those slick guys, you know, who are without saying anything spicy. Just, you know, like that was, I feel like, a big theme in the like late 2000s. And by late 2000s, I mean like 2005 to 2010 and into the 10s. There's like a big fascination with that. And I feel like they were definitely hinting at that, which was effective for like a bad guy. It's like, oh, look, he's taking advantage of this poor widow girl. And, you know, while also, you know, committing these nefarious deeds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something they were hinting at, which I think was effective for making a bad guy. I mean, obviously, it's like, you know, if he's like money, 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 like, you know, that's just kind of a given. But with the main guy, I couldn't pin his accent. I couldn't pin, like, when I remember
Dominic Green.
Yeah,
I believe he's French.
See, I remember you told me that, and I was like, I don't know what region. Well, I'm not that I'm an expert in France or anything, but like, or in French culture. I just couldn't pin his accent. I was like, I don't know if he actually is French. I think I told you, I was like, he's not actually French, and you were like, no, he is. Or
his name is Mathieu Amalric.
Is this the actor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mathieu's my cousin's name. If my cousins are listening, hi, guys.
He's in Grand Budapest Hotel, if you recall.
Oh, no, I don't.
You know, I'm glad I looked this up. So that general's name, I just lost it. I remember now, is General Medrano.
Mm.
But when I looked it up, I said that, like, so Pittsburgh.
Madrano.
I'm glad I looked it up because I remembered Bond ally. Jeffrey Wright returns as Felix Leiter in this movie, which he's my favorite Felix. I'm glad to see that. And David Harbour had a role in this, you know, before he blew up from Stranger Things, certainly. But it's kind of cool to come back and watch this movie and be like, hey, there he is.
Yeah, it's like when we were watching Lincoln and what's his face? Adam Driver was in it.
Oh, yeah.
He was the Morse boy. The Morse code guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just, like, writing no lines. Or maybe he was like, hey, everybody, get over here. Like, that was his one line.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Get over here.
But, no, it's cool seeing those kind of bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And I feel like
I'm glad I looked
that up. A lot of Bond films do that. They've got, I mean, of course, they're like, hey, what's hot? But then also, they need filler characters who can take a punch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the villains, in terms of like,
you couldn't pinpoint his accent is what you were getting
at. And like just his whole like get as a villain, I could tell. I was like, okay, you're a bad guy. Like it was kind of like when, you know, I don't want to talk about Die Another Day, because I was going to say something
and
about
you haven't
Rami
seen
Malek.
That one.
Oh, not Die Another Day. No Time to Die.
Okay.
I was going to talk about Rami Malek, and I was like, you know what, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But that guy, Mathieu, specifically
Dominic Green.
Oh, Green. Jesus.
Green, like, planets.
Dominic,
you know,
is like such a bad guy name, but every Dominic we know is like perfectly fine. Totally decent individual. Except for Dominic Mysterio, but we'll discuss that another time.
But he's a perfectly fine individual.
He's excellent. He's the best. But I don't know. There's something about that villain. I just can't, like, put my finger on it. It wasn't convincing enough because it felt too try-hardy. Oh, there you go. Put my finger on it. That's what it was.
Yeah, you know, this is obviously We got no notes. This is very conversational. I'm glad it is.
Yeah.
We'll see if this conversation makes a full episode of audio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we're not all over the place. We're off to a good start, though, certainly.
We've been gone for a bit. Don't worry
about
it.
Oh, no.
This bunch of business.
This is good stuff. Good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking on the villain. You know, Dominic Green, I mentioned, I'll come back to it. You know, I have an up and down relationship with this movie. Dominic Green's one, like, a part of that. Because he is not your ideal James Bond villain. He's almost not even your ideal villain in general. He's kind of boring in that. And this, like, he's boring. But this is what I like about it. He's just a guy.
But it's...
Yeah, I know. I drank the Kool-Aid they gave me.
It's Bond!
I know. They gave me the Kool-Aid, and I like, drank it, and then I would spit it out, and now I'm drinking it again.
And now you're like a dog eating its own puke. Yeah. Like, just... That's... It's James Bond!
I know.
It's 007.
Yeah.
He jumps off bridges and shit and gets shot, and he's like, oh, El Chihuahua. And then he just keeps doing his thing.
Even speak on, like, James Bond villains. Excuse me.
He hit the mic this
I
time.
I did.
Not
I hit
me.
The mic. But you know, like, you got your James Bond villains, like your classic ones. Even the ones that aren't deemed classic are still, you know, maybe individually iconic. And I only speak on, like, GoldenEye, Alec Trevelyan, you know, Sean Bean, who played him. Not an iconic Bond villain, but very memorable, very unique in his plot and all that.
He was a snake. He was a snaky snake. And that's a character thing. That's convincing. The motive is still very, like, and the way, you know, the way that he is presented with the fight scene and everything, like, he's, like, he infiltrated MI6. Yeah, nailed it. MI6, like, on what planet can you pull that off? Well, this planet, to be honest. This is happening all over the world. But there is something fantastic about it. Just the way that he, you know, he like the whole betrayal. You're like, oh, Jacuzzi, like that's a big thing. This guy just being like, I'm a businessman and I just really like to weirdly touch girls' cheeks and that's what makes me vile. And I'm going to poison the water system, but actually I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to come up with a business system where you have to pay for the water a little bit more. Like, this is happening in
Brilliant.
Real life. Like, this is Nestle is what they're doing. They're talking about Nestle. They're talking about Polar Spring. Like, it's like, duh. We know this. I don't need a reminder that a water bottle or a bottle of water costs $5. I don't need that reminder. Just
well,
make
now,
it like...
because you said that, it costs $20.
Yeah, like, the French. And like, in France, water's already expensive. So for like, you know what I mean? Like, how is this like a brilliant plot? It just, it was too, bleh, like, it was too boring. The plot, or the motive for the villain itself. Like,
it wasn't even like a monopoly on water. It's a ransom on water, essentially.
Oh,
like,
geez.
Hey, you either wait for the rain or you pay me whatever I ask.
That's the plot of Fievel Goes West.
It is.
That is the literal plot.
And he's more
an American
villain.
Tale.
Yeah.
Fievel Goes West. And,
yes.
And all those characters, all those villains are so much more nasty. That's the exact plot. See, this is why we need video, people.
Yeah.
People can see what impressions we're doing.
Because, you know, for the longest time, my brother, who is very, you know, we haven't really talked about my brother too much on the show, but he is also a big Bond fan. Him and I share a common love of Quantum of Solace, mainly because of the plot being so, like, different and original. Like, oh, he's holding a ransom over the water. Like, what the heck? That's crazy. But then you just said a movie that I've watched my entire life.
Yeah.
Fievel Goes West.
And it's,
I'm like,
such a
wait,
good movie.
They did that in 1993.
And like, so well, too. They got a banger of a song. That one where she's like, nah, 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 well, I can't, I don't remember how it goes. Do you want me to do the whole number? No. But see, this is what I'm saying. It's like, if you're going to do, first off, do some research. They should have watched Fievel Goes West.
Maybe they did. Always, and they're like, twirling their mustaches.
This is my advice to filmmakers everywhere. Watch Fievel Goes West. It has every plot. you could ever imagine within one film, perfectly crafted. It is a American masterpiece. Great. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not unheard of. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is an original plot for Bond because it's never been done in Bond, but that doesn't mean it's never been done. Mm-hmm. And, oh, maybe that's where they were like, sorry, my mic is slowly lowering itself. And
I'm going to tighten it. You got a little tightener cranker over there.
Oh, there we go. That's very loose. There we go. You can hear me at work. There we go.
Ba-ding.
Yeah, because I was like slowly lowering myself. I was like, why am I hunched over all of a sudden? It's like, what was I going to say?
Well, you know, speaking on, we're harping on the villain because, you know, it is a common thing, and a common thing said, and it makes sense in a lot of Bond films. A movie's only as good as his villain, right?
Yeah.
Because the villain drives the inciting incident, the plot, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Problem solving is the essence of good storytelling.
So
that's a Margot Fritter original.
The villain in this movie.
I just said my last name. I'm so sorry. Oh, fuck. Oh, well.
We'll try to mark that.
Just here, I'll say Margot, and can you put Margot?
Well, you know what?
Original?
You know what? You've already put yourself out there in public.
That's true.
You're a graphic designer. You know, we'll touch on an important part of the show, this episode in specific, near the tail end.
Sure. My bad.
Put a pin in that. Because we, spoiler alert, we were guests on another podcast, and
shout out Yin's Boys.
It will be brought up tail end of the show.
Yeah.
Where Margot's name is mentioned anyway, because, you know.
So it doesn't even matter. Let's move past it. Sorry. Yeah. I'm like milking it.
We're trying to be secret spies.
We're talking about me, and I love it, and we got to move this. We got to move this along. So
Dominic Green. Dominic Green is only as good as a movie's only as good as a villain. Yeah. And I said, this villain is boring. Is the movie boring? Not necessarily, but this boring villain is different in that he's just a guy. He's just a normal dude. He doesn't have any, you know, distinguishing scars. He doesn't have a unique voice. The only thing maybe memorable about him is he looks with eyes wide open every now and then, like.
Yeah. And his voice is weird.
What do they say? Damaged goods. That's like a line he says.
Oh.
In reference to Camille, who he has a relationship
heat.
That's
with. Cheap heat.
Yeah, he's got cheap heat.
Yeah.
He does, I don't want to say unique, but definitely not common, is he has had a sexual relationship with the Bond girl.
Oh, yeah.
Prior to Bond. And this might be the only one, in fact, correct me later, the villain has a sexual relationship with the main Bond girl, whereas Bond himself does not ever have a sexual relationship with the main Bond girl in this movie, in a Bond movie.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Camille?
Yeah.
No, they kissed.
I thought they did.
No, they never
did. Oh, they kiss in the car.
They kiss in the car.
Yeah.
That's the only time. It's more of like.
That's sex. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I thought that's what it was.
I thought that's what it was. Is that why we don't have a baby yet? Sorry. unpack, repack.
Yeah, that, and that's more of like I appreciate you. I thank you. Mm-hmm. I might find you attractive. Actually, she does. They do find each other attractive. They kind of address it, but they never do it. But they do appreciate each other. They helped each other achieve their goals, essentially.
And it's Bond is still recovering. They picked up right where we left off with Casino.
And that's why it's more appropriate.
Yeah, it makes a little bit more sense. But in terms of the Bond girl, let's segue into that.
Enough with Dominic Green. Let's talk about Camille.
Real quick on that. I'll end with this.
Is Camille boring?
Camille is not boring. Camille is very interesting. It's a Russian actress, right? Or Lithuanian or something.
Yeah, Olga Kurylenko.
That is a Slavic name if I've ever heard one. Eastern European, because I don't know the term sometimes. Yeah, she's perfectly interesting, very driven. She has an ultimate goal, and it's based on a personal issue. But it does evolve as she hangs out with Bond, I guess, or teams up with him. I do want to talk. We'll start with Strawberry Fields, because that's a shorter conversation.
The sub-Bond girl.
The sub-Bond
played by
girl.
Gemma Arterton, who did have, like, after this movie, it's not her debut, but definitely, like, definitely a big spotlight movie for her. She, like, in the early 2010s, 2010s, she was in a lot of stuff.
What was she in? Because her face is very
offhand, off memory. She was in, like, Clash of the Titans. Mm-hmm. She was in Hansel and Gretel, where with Jeremy Renner.
Don't know that one.
You know, she was in a lot of stuff, and that's all I can remember. But she wasn't. Was it Prince of Persia? No. She wasn't a lot. She was like, you know, Hollywood kind of goes through there, like, this is the it person for a little while. She definitely had like a 5-year period where she was in a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily good stuff, but damn it, she was there.
I mean, okay, so my first thing with Strawberry Fields is it's an homage, the whole Strawberry Fields, you know.
Definitely an
Isaac Yankum, whatever, you know, you give your character
Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore, thank you. Like, there's, that was an homage. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing about homages is that it's not effective if it's dropped on your lap to break the fourth wall. Because that was definitely, like, even Bond was like, like, what does he say?
He never finds out. You never know her name until the credits. Fields is what she says.
Oh, that's what it was. It was like Fields. It was like, what's her first name? She was like, don't worry about it. And it was
just
like
Fields.
Just Fields. And you're like, oh, boo. I know what you're doing. And again, it's this kind of effort to break the fourth wall and get like the audience chuckling, like, oh, I know what her name is. Or because, you know, you can just assume it's some kind of pun, some kind of play on words. And she's a redhead. So you're like, oh, duh. But or a strawberry blonde, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't love that. If more of those had been peppered in throughout the movie, that would have made sense. Some kind of elaborate villain, some kind of elaborate plan. But everything else was pretty much based in reality. Something that could possibly happen that if you read it on the news, you wouldn't be like, oh my God, this is, you know, you'd react, but you'd be like, another day, another fuck me, you know, whatever. So that kind of took me out of it. Her function as like a sub Bond girl or whatever was fine, good, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, she was like the token for Bond's guilt for the rest of the movie, which was great. I mean, mm-hmm. or not great, but it was very effective.
A plot point, indeed.
Yeah, big time. I mean, it gave her that motivation of like, this was like one of the first times where, or not the first times, but this is what I love about M and Dame Judi Dench. Plays it in such a way that it's like, these are my employees. I'm not just like, maybe that she does have an emotional attachment or not to them. She wants them protected. The last thing she wants is to put anybody's life at risk. So it's not just like the angry boss was like, again, Bond, you screwed her in the Jeep. Like, it's like, can you please, for the love of Christ, stop doing this? You're an HR nightmare. And the solemnity that she brings to the role, especially when this girl dipped in tar. Something about oil. Her lungs are full of it. That whole line is, it's incredibly, it's not just for the one-liner, it's targeted at Bond. Like, I want you to feel bad about this. I want you to understand the severity of the situation and what happened when you fuck around. This girl was only meant to do this. She wasn't a field agent. She, like, works at a desk. This was her intention, and this is what happened to her because of you. So effective.
Mm-hmm.
So effective. Mm-hmm. So if her name was not Strawberry Fields, that would have made... If she was just the boner Bond girl, like just, oh, cool, one and done, the end, that would have made more sense. But this is like a character that drives the internal monologue of the main character, not for the rest of the movie, but part of it. It's lingering in his subconscious. It actually affects his actions moving forward, not on a long-term basis like Vesper did, but... You know, there's that moment of, like, he can't show that he feels guilty. He's not going to go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, like, whatever. But it does affect the way, like, he doesn't boink Camille, mm-hmm. you know? Maybe mm-hmm. that had something to do with it.
No emotional connection, certainly, to Strawberry Fields, but maybe.
That's what I mean. Like, there was no, mm-hmm. he did that with her.
Yeah.
And not to say that's a bad thing. Whatever, have some fun. But as a result, she became affiliated with him mm-hmm. on a deeper level. Now, the bad guys don't know that. They don't know that she doesn't mean anything to him. And even if they do know she doesn't mean anything, they know that she's innocent. And it's like, look, the innocent will die if you fuck around. And that probably not. And again, I don't want to make this like, oh, this was a big realization point, but like, he knew that would happen to somebody who would get too close to him. So mm-hmm. maybe he was keeping Camille at bay. It affected the way that he, like, I mean, perceived himself, talked, communicated with his, like, with his peers moving forward in the movie. I'm not saying on a grand scheme, but again, like, that character had value. It wasn't just some, you know, throwaway Bond girl. And they kind of ruined it with her name, like, just a little bit. It was a gimmick. And then it was like, oh, actually, this is very important. So that would be my biggest thing with that.
Not that I disagree, but I think that is that was the choice, though, of why they, because I don't know why we're lingering on Strawberry Fields so much, but we are.
Yeah. She's a great character.
No, you only know her name from the credits, right, of Strawberry Fields. Mm-hmm. In the movie, it's just Fields. She's just Fields, which isn't a crazy name. You alluded to, like, oh, you can make the connections. But you probably wouldn't have if you didn't.
If you were a novice. Yeah. But the nostalgics, again, their understanding of the fan base. Mm-hmm. These are diehard mm-hmm. fans. Either the people who are coming to see it. Isn't it cool when you're in a room and somebody makes a reference and you know you're one of the few to get it? That's a good feeling.
Yeah, of course.
That's a great feeling when you're like, oh, I know what that means. Oh, I know what that's alluding to. That's a great feeling. That's how they play with their audience, which is great. But again, if you're just going to do it one off and then the rest of the movie is like, in other news, you know, the water is expensive now. Like, that's like, what value does that have then? Where's the parallel here? And yeah.
Just to wrap up the thought, though, like, with what you're saying, you know, maybe not knowing her name is Strawberry and it's just Fields. It definitely makes that whole scenario from beginning to end more serious mm-hmm. than as opposed to her name, Strawberry.
That's very true.
They remove that from the film that we watch. You know it later. So I find that to be a good tactic, I guess.
Yeah.
Very effective. Very effective to the character mm-hmm. of Bond in this movie, who, as we said at the top of the show, this is like this film is essentially his reaction to the previous film, mm-hmm. Casino Royale. So to that point, let me ask you, how do you feel this movie acts and feels as a sequel? Like, Casino Royale, mm-hmm. the plot takes place, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Casino and you've seen Quantum, well, you know, the love of his life, Vesper, he was essentially betrayed by her. She sacrificed herself to save him, but he feels betrayed and she died. And this is like essentially a revenge mission / new mission / character arc of Bond and how he views himself and his relationships and blah, blah, blah. How do you feel this Quantum of Solace handles that?
So I think in terms of how it handles that, in like just first thought, very well. Bond is not the same Bond that we saw in Casino Royale, but it's still the same. Like, he's not the same as in, like, oh, sorry, I had a great thought and I just stumbled over my words.
A changed man?
No, it's a continuation of a character growth. The arc goes beyond just the one movie. Mm-hmm. It's accentuated in this movie and it's extended into the next. Mm-hmm. And it makes you anticipate that. So I think it is a good bridge. Do I think this was the best depiction of Bond and just the person that he is? In some aspects here and there. But there, like, in certain scenes, you can see it. Like, oh, that's James Bond. In others, I can't think of any specific examples. But there are times where it kind of takes you out of it or it's a little too movie magic-y. Or, I don't know, it's his character doesn't stay consistent enough throughout the film that I can say, yes, they transitioned perfectly into this movie. But it does kind of set you up for another movie after that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the cinematography, very different from Casino Royale. Very different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if this was a one and done, like just two movies and then we're going to get a new Bond, new director, blah, blah, whatever, I wouldn't say it's effective. Considering we know that there are more movies after this, I think it works because every movie's pretty different. The Daniel Craig ones, mm-hmm. Sorry, I got a burp. Excuse me. So it's every movie we know is going to be pretty different. That's, you know, that's a given. But if you're just looking at it independently as a sequel, not very effective. It's very, it's not sepia toned, but it's very like red throughout the movie.
Yeah. Very desert.
Very desert.
Very dry.
Yeah. Which again, I'm like,
very dry for
like,
a movie about water.
There's no water, so look how dry they are. They all have chapped lips in the movie. Like, it just, it's those details that I'm like, I get what you're doing. Do it more subtly. Just a little bit. Bring it down a little bit. It was a little too showcasey. I'm sure they were excited that Casino Royale was well received, right, from what I recall.
Oh yeah. Big time.
And this is usually what happens. They're like, oh, this can't fail. The first one was so good. I'm like, no, it can fail because the first one was so good. Pay attention to those details. You don't have to bring that saturation down a little bit. I keep saying that every time we watch the movie. I'm like, they just dialed up the saturation to like 500. This is just too much for how little color they use. It's too much because it's all orange and yellow. And that's it. And I'm like, I get it. Ooh, desert. Like, you know, like that shit playing in the background. Totally get it. But don't do that. It's too much for me. What about you?
Certainly not a fun factoid, but a factoid nonetheless about this movie. You know, when Bond movies were, you know, in their prime, I'll say, they came out like every 2 to 3 years, and this one was no different. 2006, 2008, hey, there's a new Bond movie. Mm-hmm. However, during the production of this movie, the conceptual time of this film, there was a writer's strike. So there was no script finalized when this movie was made. Daniel Craig, an actor himself, contributed to the script of this movie. Huh. So... you know, Hollywood's an interesting machine. This wasn't even like Hollywood. This was made in England. But the movie making industry is an interesting machine where, you know, director, actors, everyone else, they all came together to make this movie, but they had no, like, it was like a last minute decision to make this like a proper sequel to Casino Royale. And so they, like, interjected certain elements from the previous film, plot-wise, storyline-wise, into this movie. So they're the easiest, broadest way to say it is they made this movie without a finalized script, so there wasn't, like, a full realized story. It's also the shortest of all the Bond movies, at, a little over an hour and a half, just barely over an hour and a half.
And somehow it dragged for so long.
Must be that color tone you're talking about. You're like, I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
This is dry. And this villain is boring.
Yeah, that's how we set the tone, too. We didn't drink water all day, and we were like, man, this really hits home.
Actually, to set the tone, set the table, this movie starts in Siena, Italy. And I made...
Isn't it Vienna? Siena?
It's Siena.
Sorry.
Not Vienna.
And, I'm not from this country, so.
Yeah. And I made a traditional dish. It was like this pasta dish with like sausage. It was real good.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember why I said that. But
oh, because I said that we didn't drink water to set scene.
Yeah. But we set the scene with some Italian.
Italian. That's what it was.
And no water.
Yeah. The pasta was not cooked in water either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you set, as always, you always set the scene so well. Do you remember what drink you made?
Honestly, I think it's what I'm sipping on right now.
Martini.
Was a Vesper martini. Mm-hmm. There's that scene where Bond recruits Mathis, who, you know, Mathis was wrongfully accused in the previous film, and he was tortured a bit by MI6 for information. And, you know, it was wrongfully accused, and he was rewarded, and he, you know, repaid essentially, and they got him this beautiful house, and he's doing his thing. And when Bond, you know, confronts him and is like, hey, I need your help because of your skills and your connections, Mathis is reluctant, but he joins the adventure again. He's a great character. When they're on a boat traveling to wherever they're traveling to, I'm not good with locations. Bond's getting drunk on these suckers, and it's one of the only times, if not the only time, you see Bond inebriated.
Yeah.
Big
by
time.
By his own accord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's on these Vesper martinis, so.
He just wants one last bit of her.
Ooh, I'm going to cry.
Ooh.
But yeah, you know, we spoke a little bit on some Bond allies. Mm-hmm. Mathis is great. they do away with him in this film, and he, in my opinion, in Bond lore, iconically disposes of Mathis, you know, just dumping him in the
it's
dumpster.
Like a cat, nine yeah. lives.
He would have wanted it this way.
Yeah,
he wouldn't
yeah
have cared.
I don't think he would have. I don't think he would have, Bond. He's just being a lazy bastard.
Nah, I said that. he didn't say he would have wanted it this way. He says he wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. I don't believe it.
Yeah, maybe
I
not.
Don't believe it. If my friends ever did that to me, I'd rise from the grave, just like, you know, I'd come back covered in trash.
Yeah.
Trash man.
I want to touch on the action of this movie.
And then we'll talk about the intro music.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the action of this movie is divisive in that it was a product of its time, / I mentioned the director is a more artistic director. He wanted to, like, emulate land, sea, and air. He wanted to emulate elements. He wanted to emulate you feeling like you're POV, over the shoulder of the action. He wanted you to feel like you're in the action. He wanted you to feel like you're in a car crash, often that's the term used.
Mm-hmm.
But also of this time, a lot of jump cuts were used in action.
Yeah.
Things like XXX, things like Taken, which also came out around this time. Mm-hmm. A lot of quick cuts, like fast-paced, shaky cam.
Yeah.
This was definitely, it was just like a part of what film was like at this era,
but maybe on
steroids.
I remember when we were watching the movie, I was like, oh, I got to keep like one eye closed to keep,
dizzy.
Up. Yeah, I was like, what the hell's going on here? And then you explained it to me. You're like, it was intentional. It's to make you feel like you were in a car crash. I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want to feel like I'm in a car crash.
No one does.
I want to feel like I'm beating the bad guys, you know? And I get this whole idea of like, sometimes you want to make your audience feel like unsettled and tense and build that up. You do that in more subtle ways, I want to say. I feel like cinematography sometimes is wasted when they try to do the whole like zoom in, zoom out, jump cuts, this, that, shaky camera. Like, again, when it's used tastefully and when it's done in a way that's, you know, more strategic. And not to say that it wasn't strategic. I'm just saying like it was a lot. It was a lot. Again, they dialed it up to 500. Mm. They were like, this is it. Again, this can't fail. Like, don't take those risks. Don't do that. And that's kind of how I feel about the action. It was just a little too like, try to keep up. And don't like, I'm the watcher. Like, do the work for me, you know?
Sure. You know,
the viewer, sorry.
I mentioned at the top, I'm very nostalgic for the opening of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where, damn it, it is a car crash. And it's high octane. It's crash, cut, boom, and then dun, 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 and then like every sound's crazy. That feels to me like it makes sense. However, most key action scenes in this movie are like that throughout, and it's an action movie at the end of the day. So it can feel exhausting. In a movie that's only an hour and a half long, it does feel like, and maybe not in a good way. There are some great action scenes in this movie, but there are some that are maybe forgettable or, you know, just like there. I almost forgot in saying it. There's a plane crash scene near the third act of this movie. And it's just like, it's the same as the other action scenes. They all kind of like feel the same because they're all just like, nothing really feels individual.
Which kind of is kind of a letdown when you think about it, because it doesn't give enough opportunities for that iconic, like, ooh, that one action movie, that one action sequence.
Scene,
you know, everything just kind of looks the same throughout.
In my opinion, there's only two that really stand out from this film, maybe three. I'll say two. The opening for me, nostalgically, but there's a scene near the opening also. It's like after the opening credit song, where he's chasing this double agent through that town in Siena. And they have this, like, fight where they're, like, hanging on ropes and, like, reaching for this gun and crashing through glass. That one's good. And for me, like, that I'm like, ooh, that's good stuff. And it ends with Bond, like, catching that gun, grabbing the rope, pulling himself up, and you just see him pull the trigger.
I don't remember.
And it lingers on him, and you just know he got the guy.
Right.
You never see him shoot the guy.
Because he doesn't go,
Jesus. Other than that, there's really nothing that stands out. There's a lot. There's a lot of action in this movie. The villain, we'll get back to him.
Hey, real quick, it'd be so funny if when he was hanging from the rope, and he's like, ah, missed him.
Yeah, he shoots again. Yeah. they never cut. Yeah. Like a,
he scurries off. Like
maybe in the Bond lore, like as a fan, Dominic Green, jumping back to him. He's boring, just normal dude. However, Bond and him fight. Bond's a trained assassin. This guy, he counts money. Dominic Green. Mm. They fight, and Dominic Green fights with an axe, and he just fights like a crazy man. He's screaming. He's flailing. Mm-hmm. That makes him a little more standoutish as a villain.
He is French, after all.
Got him. Yeah, to me, maybe that stands out as an action scene, as a fan of Bond. And maybe I don't want to say a sympathizer with Quantum of Solace, because in the fandom, it might be coming up in the ranks, but a lot of people in general public don't really revisit this movie too much, or maybe they don't like it for some of the things we're talking about.
What about the opening credits?
That's very divisive, too. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Why do you love it?
I don't know. It's definitely, like I was talking top of the show, teenager, I was obsessed with this movie when it came out. I bought that soundtrack and I just listened to it. And, you know, at the time, that was like my era's type of music, I guess. It kind of blended the classic Bond sounds. Like there were some trumpets in there that were like,
it was very like, Yeah, the like there's definitely that like orchestra.
Like big band, yes,
brass. Like you can feel that for sure. Sorry, but go ahead.
But yeah, it did have that big brass, big band. It did have Jack White and Alicia Keys doing some like kind of, I don't want to say like experimental rock, but they're like doing their own like a door left open.
There's definitely soul. Nice. That was good. You also did the little body shuffle singing that. That was good.
It's one of my favorite themes. And among, from what I gather, amongst the Bond community, definitely one of the least liked, lowest ranked themes. Not for me. It's high up there for me. I really enjoy the song quite a bit.
How do you feel about it with the animation that they came up with?
I also like that opening animation sequence. It's you know, consistent with the movie you're getting. The only thing I don't really love about it is Bond, Daniel Craig, is in it throughout, but he's not really doing much. He's just kind of walking and pointing his gun in the desert, and there's like sand exploding and weird targets. I really love the color palette, like lots of like shades of blue and orange and golds and things like that. It's very pleasing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think just my frequency, it's very pleasing to me, that opening sequence. It's not as pleasing as a lot of other Bond openings, right, but it's high up there.
Okay.
Casino Royale is definitely my favorite. It is my favorite Bond theme. It's my favorite Bond opening credit sequence. Maybe Goldfinger too. That like the hands and the projections and stuff. Like,
yeah. I mean, you know, handmade, actual practical stuff classic. Is you can't beat that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, here's the thing: the music banger, love it. Who was it? Was it Alicia Keys?
Alicia Keys and Jack White.
Yeah, excellent. 10 out of 10. Great combo. There's that soul, there's that beat, there's that heaviness to it, like the bang 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 nature was there. Here's my thing with the animations that they chose, the women rolling around a sand dunes, very cool concept, did not match the intensity of that music. Was lacking in that. I could imagine Moonraker over that. I could imagine something a little bit more like, oh, You Only Live Twice, something a little bit more like melodic, a little bit more not so much of like a brass orchestra, but something like a lot of violins, with a lot of violins. Sorry. But the like separately, they stand alone perfectly well, the song and then the actual visual stuff together, they just don't match. Completely takes me out of it. I don't know how to feel. Again, I don't know if this is them trying to be like, ooh, do you feel unsettled? I'm like, that doesn't feel intentional enough. for it to have that effect. I just don't think it was effective.
I love that you said it like that, because call back to ourselves. We have an episode a few times back of unreleased or unused potential Bond theme songs. And this one was one of them, Quantum of Solace. There's a piece done by that dame Shirley Bassey, and in conjunction or with work of David Arnold, who was the composer of this film. She made a song called No Good About Goodbye. And there's definitely like tones from that song that are used in the score of Quantum of Solace. So it was always assumed like this was a potential Bond theme song that they never used. That was never confirmed. Listen to our episode to hear more about it. But
nice plug.
There are videos on YouTube, maybe we'll check it out, where they take the Quantum of Solace opening and they put that song No Good About Goodbye by Ooh. Shirley Bassey over it. It doesn't fit necessarily. Oh, okay. As in like, you know, one was definitely made for the other,
mm-hmm.
but it is interesting to watch because of what you're saying. Like, you're like the intensity. I'll leave it like that. The intensity of Another Way to Die, which is what we got, and No Good About Goodbye are very different. And then the intensity of what you're saying, what matches the graphics doesn't line up for you. It'd be interesting to check out.
The only intense part of that entire animation was when he shot that bullet and it went pow, like that whole thing. That was the only time it's like when it kicks in. Yeah. Which was really cool. So it sets you up. You're like, oh, awesome. And then it's just women rolling around, which like is great, but like not for that song. It, I don't know. Didn't, not for me. Not for me. So,
I love it. I love that song.
I guaranteed we're going to listen to it later.
I listened to it today.
Yeah, yeah.
In preparation. Get you in honor mood. Of. You know, I don't want to like rewind because I feel like we're coming to a close on this episode. Mm-hmm. But Camille, we talked about her a little bit. She's different. I just wanted to add something. She's different in that she does have some backstory. She does have some character development. She has a unique relationship with Bond where they're, I don't want to say they're in love, but they might have love for each other, but they're not lovers and they're not in love with each other. Which I find interesting. She's ranked high for me as a Bond girl, but it, honestly, it's mostly from the poster of this movie, the promotional poster for this movie, which was Bond and Camille walking through the desert and they are tattered.
Yeah. That's a great shot.
I love that shot.
That's a great shot.
Love that shot.
Mm-hmm. Just totally, it's a great culmination of everything that's happened to them, but their determination to keep going. And you can also, they're just, it's that, what is it, 1,000-yard stare, just walking forward, just walking straight. Like, hopefully we hit something. Mm-hmm. It's, but not worried for their own safety. They're just walking.
Yeah.
Like, we need step one, step two, step three, step four. This was just like step 5 out of 10 steps. They were like, all right, now we go. It's great. It's a character building. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful shot. And that's really cool that they use that.
Yeah, one of my favorites. And then, you know, just another callback to Dominic Green as villain. But he's the bad of this movie, but he's not the big bad in that they introduce a group, Quantum. Quantum is a villainous organization.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they formed it like that is because they were kind of going for like a Spectre, which is in Bond lore, you know, your evil terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, they did not have the rights anymore to the title of Spectre. So they made Quantum. Eventually, in Spectre, which is the following film, when they got the rights back, they kind of reveal that Quantum was just like a subgroup of Spectre. So that's kind of interesting to like, there's a subgroup, there's this really bizarre opera scene where they're all the villains are meeting, but they have like these little earbuds and they're communicating with each other in public, and Bond kind of, you know, sneaks in on it, but it's weird in like how it's shot and how it's cut and sound, and
right.
It's very unique ish and you know, saying Quantum, it made me think of one more nostalgic thing. I should have taken a squirt of it before I came up here, but I have some cologne called Quantum. Some James good Bond stuff. Cologne. It was my one of my first, like, hey, I'm 17. Like, here's some like cologne. Yeah. That's
all
not
over.
That's not Axe body
full
spray.
Full torso, full back, full crotch. Just yeah. Cover all bases.
Quantum. And what's funny is when that cologne came out, I bought some, and it smelled great. You can buy it still now. It's a little tougher to find, but you can find it. And I got some. I have it downstairs. It's weird how the brain works. I can spray it, and I can smell it. I'm like, this smells okay. It does not smell like it did from 2008. It does not. It's a different formula.
I will say, though, I'm sure it is a different formula. But, as a little lady, you grew up, you know, with those Victoria's Secret floral scents. And you're like, oh, this is great. This smells so good. And then you try it as an adult, and you're like, oh, this smells like strawberry moonshine, like this is bad. And so maybe that is what happened. It was just you were like, actually no, Tom Ford smells so much better.
Well, that is definitely true, but it's Quantum now smells a little more musky. Mm-hmm. Back then it had some of those same notes, but it was definitely more on the, I'll say, the sweeter side. It had a little step up on that level. Now it's definitely like a bolder smell, where before it was definitely a sweeter smell.
Okay.
There's still a cologne called Ocean Royale. This shit does not stick on you. You have to spritz it every hour.
There you go.
But damn it still smells good. It still smells awesome. Like it used to.
That's very cool. Oh, man. Damn.
I have a lot of love for Quantum of Solace.
That's good.
I loved it when it came out. But then in my late teens, like shortly after, I watched it too much, maybe. But in my college years and almost into my 30s, I'd say late 20s, I didn't like this movie. It ranked very low for me. It wasn't one I revisited a lot. I fell into a lot of the common opinions, a lot of the
sure.
hate.
Sure, I
lot
mean,
of the
naturally.
Hate, a lot of the hate of this movie where, you know, the plot's kind of, I don't want to say some of the things you're saying, but like the plot is kind of blah. The villain is blah. The main Bond girl is whatever. It's just like trying to connect to Casino Royale. I'm not saying it's not all those things, but all those things, for some reason, make me like this movie even more than I should.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my nostalgic feelings for it and memories. And when I revisit this movie, I really enjoy it. And as far as Daniel Craig's Bond films, he's got five of them. It might be my second favorite. I've always said it's
wow.
Spectre, and Spectre is also not the popular choice. And maybe when we revisit Spectre, I'll have, you know, they're neck and neck. It could be one or the other. I have a whole tale to tell about my nostalgic feelings for Spectre too, which is almost at its 10-year.
Tune in.
Yeah, when we get to that, probably next year.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, upon revisiting Quantum, I'm like, man, this might be my second favorite of the Craig movies,
yeah.
Which is unpopular because Skyfall exists.
Sure.
Because No Time to Die exists.
But
a lot of
people
like that.
We're not here to be popular.
No.
We're here for a good squeeze is what we are.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I was about to be like, yeah, we're here to be yourself and
to
myself.
Yeah. Whoever has fun is the winner.
Whoever squeeze
so,
is the winner.
What's your verdict?
That's a great question. Is this for the novice or the nostalgic? That's a tricky one. I don't think this is for the novice, in that to truly appreciate this movie, you gotta watch a previous film. You gotta watch Casino Royale to really get what this movie's trying to give you. If you jump into this one first, or, you know, fresh, it could taint your feelings of Bond as a genre and a category, a series, but it could taint your feelings when you eventually watch Casino Royale or something like that. There's too many elements.
Mm-hmm.
So although I do enjoy this movie quite a bit, I can't say it's for the novice.
Okay. I think it's for the birds. No, I think it's, this is the only reason why I'm going with this opinion. In its efforts to target the nostalgics, it fails.
Mm.
It's you know, they're hinting at like, oh, Strawberry Fields, like, oh, I know, or Miss Field, or Fields, just
even,
Fields.
Even how
like,
she dies now, is every, a callback.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they're trying so hard to do that, that it fails because it can almost take you out of it because there aren't enough callbacks. I'm not saying that a movie needs to be homage heavy to hit the nostalgics, and it doesn't need to be like on the nose references. But if you're doing an homage, it needs to be subtle. It needs to be seamless. This one was not seamless. It was seam filled, to be honest. It was like Fields, just Fields. Like, okay, that's try-hardy. The oil bath, try-hardy. Too much about it was trying so hard. So I don't think it's for the nostalgics. I think it's for the novice. Now, is it a good movie? No, but that's not what we're here to do. I think it's for the novice, not for the nostalgic, and not even because it's a new movie, purely because in its efforts to, like, I'd rather those references go over my head than for it to be poorly done.
Because you could see that as damaging also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the verdict is it's not a good movie. It's for no one. No, yeah. I'm joking. It's got its moments. It's a good movie. Overall, it's very exciting. Like you said, it's not boring, but not for the right reasons. So plot, villain motive, not good. Makes it boring. Action, character relationships, the nuances in the acting choices they made makes it a good movie. Makes it not boring. Mm-hmm. Makes it exciting.
Interesting.
So I do believe it is for the novice, not from a perspective of, oh, it's one of the newer movies, purely because they didn't, everything that they were doing to target the nostalgics was ineffective.
Do we need to like flip a coin?
No, we can just disagree. Car c'est la vie.
I can't even pull that magnet up.
Yeah.
I was going to flip a magnet.
It's like a flat magnet, too, when it flips. I'm like, I think we disagree.
We just disagree.
That's fine.
I guess.
Yeah, because that's life.
But I
should we rock, paper, scissors for it?
We'll do that. Okay. I really appreciate that perspective of like it's not for the novice because, you know.
It's not for the nostalgic.
Yeah, it's not for the nostalgic. Yeah, it is for the novice is what you're saying. It is for the novice because of what can go over your head.
They made it for the nostalgic, and as a result, it turned into...
Interesting.
This is for the novice if you want to enjoy it, because they fell short on what they were trying to do. Okay. Oh, wait, 1, 2, 3, go, or 1, 2, 3?
1, 2, 3, go. Wrong. Paper, scissors, shoot.
Fuck.
So, spoiler alert if you couldn't figure that out, I won.
He did scissors, I did paper. Like an idiot.
So there you have it. This film is for the nostalgic, not for the novice. If you're new to the Bond franchise,
due to a technicality, okay. So.
Yeah, I don't want to say spare yourself, but just wait a little bit.
Hang tight.
You get to that's Freudian slip. Watch Casino Royale, then watch Quantum of Solace.
Yeah.
All right. And that's how I leave it. That's how I'm going to squeeze that.
You've been saying that.
Squeeze them scissors.
By the way, you're listening to a good squeeze in case you haven't put it together by now.
That's right.
That was a bad... Let's just whatever. Anyways.
Even worse. Hey, to wrap it up. We can't even do that.
We do. There is, before we hit our plugs, I do want to give a big shout out to Yin's Boys. They are a local Pittsburgh podcast. You guys should go check them out. We were guests on their podcast very recently, like 2 weeks ago. It's their latest episode. Very happy about that. It was a excellent time. They gave us the full Western PA experience. We went out and did a bunch of activities. You can hear about it on the pod, on their pod.
Including, we got to shoot a James Bond-esque gun in a Beretta. That's a James Bond-style gun.
There you go. They gave us the full good squeeze ex-Yin's Boys experience. I do want to say huge thank you to them. They did not have to do that. We've been in collaboration together for quite some time, so it was bound to happen at some point. But we do have some plans with them, so stay tuned for that. And it's going to be very exciting. Mm-hmm. They were wonderful hosts to us, and we hope one day to return the favor.
Indeed. In that episode, you will hear tales of Margot here from A Good Squeeze, but as her trade as a graphic designer and where you can find her services and things like that. So like alluding to what we were talking earlier.
And you get a little background from us and you get great conversation. They're an excellent podcast. Yes. They're a little spicy.
They are a little spicy.
If you're a little sensitive, just either.
You know what? We're a little spicy too.
Yeah,
here and there.
You've had to edit some stuff out for sure.
Sure. And I keep a lot of stuff in.
That's right.
And you know, the future hope is, and not even hope, but the plan, mm-hmm. as you were just saying, hey, we were guests on their show. They're going to be guests on our show.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of hinting at that. Yeah. But if we're just going to flat out say it, then yeah, eventually, expect to.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
We only have two microphones, so that's been the biggest.
That's part of working on it. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, so expect that episode sooner rather than later. And we're all very excited about it. But just to kind of wrap up the plugs, so you can find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze, where we have updates. And we've been kind of dead lately, but we'll be back up and running in no time. But check us out. Hit us up. Send us your thoughts. Leave us some comments. We want to know. We want to have these conversations. Are you a novice? Are you nostalgic? We do have a recent listener who's been blowing us up, which has been excellent. It's been great talking to you guy in the comments.
Blow us up like Daniel Craig in No Time to Die.
Hey, full circle. Well, don't spoil it. It's been really great. Anytime we get messages from you guys, we get really excited. I just know when you're messaging us on Instagram, you're talking to the novice, but I am running to the nostalgic to be like, what does this mean? What are they saying? What is this reference? So it's an educated conversation coming from both of us. But so find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze. And
you can also find us on that Facebook machine. I like to reiterate what Margot posts on that Instagram machine, but I also include links to, you know, where you can find us on social or on Spotify, Audio Boom, which is our main hub. Mm-hmm. But you can also find us anywhere. Anywhere you get your podcasts, we're there. Google Play, Apple Podcast.
And then one last plug, check out the Ince Boys. We were guests on their show. They're going to be here soon. So familiarize yourself with their candor, with the way that they do things, and where, you know, what we bring to them and what they'll bring to us. So at Ince Boys on Instagram and therealinceboys.com. Ooh. Hit them up on their hotline. I think it's 412-613-1116. Maybe. I think I got that, but we'll see. And check them out on Instagram, too. Mm-hmm. But check us out first, obviously.
That's right.
Yeah.
And with all that being said, this has been our show. Hope you got a good squeeze out of it.
That's right. I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this has been
A Good Squeeze for the 100th time.
Nailed it. Nailed it. We missed you guys. We missed saying it. Ciao.